Hello, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency, devoted to promoting musicians and authors worldwide. Call us today at 941-877-1552 to start your free publicity evaluation. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. Please welcome the host of Interviewing the Legends, music journalist, author, and entrepreneur, Ray Shasho.
Hello once again, everyone. I'm your host, Ray Shasho, and welcome to another edition of Interviewing the Legends on VBS Radio, brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call us today at 941-877-1552, or email us at publicityworksagency.com. Remember, we shine only when we make you shine. While working at Jimmy's Music Shop in Manhattan in 1966, Baxter met guitarist Jimi Hendrix, who was just beginning his career as a frontman. For a short period during that year, Jeff Baxter was a member of a Hendrix-led band called Jimmy James and the Blue Flames, along with Manny's employee, Randy California. After the breakup of his band Ultimate Spinach, Jeff Baxter relocated to Los Angeles, California, finding work as a session guitarist. In 1972, he became a founding member of the band Steely Dan, along with guitarist bassist Walter Becker, keyboardist Donald Fagen, guitarist Denny Diaz, drummer Jim Hodder, and vocalist David Palmer. Becker and Fagen were employed at the time as staff songwriters for ABC Records, and he formed the band as a vehicle to promote their songs. Jeff Baxter appeared with Steely Dan on their first three albums, Can't Buy a Thrill in 1972, Countdown to Ecstasy in 73, and Pretzel Logic in 1974. Among his contributions were guitar solos on the 1974 hit single, Ricky Don't Lose That Number, and also My Old School. With the Doobie Brothers, while finishing work on Pretzel Logic, Baxter became aware of Becker and Fagen's intentions to retire Steely Dan from touring. With that in mind, Baxter left the band in 74 to join the Doobie Brothers, who at the time were touring in support of their fourth album, What Were Once Vices Are Now Habits. As a session man, he played on Vices as well as playing pedal steel on South City Midnight Lady. On its predecessor, The Captain and Me, Baxter's first album as a full member of the group was 1975's Stampede. Baxter contributed an acoustic interlude entitled Precincts, significant turns on slide and pedal, steel guitar, and the guitar solo for the hit single Take Me in Your Arms, Rock Me a Little While. Baxter jammed with former White House Secretary and close friend Tony Snow's band, Beats Workin', at the congressional picnic held on the South Lawn of the White House. Baxter fell into his second profession almost by accident in the mid-1980s. Jeff's interest in music recording technology led him to wonder about hardware and software that was originally developed for military use. Data compression, algorithms, and large capacity storage devices. As it happened, his next door neighbor was a retired engineer who had worked on the Sidewinder missile program. This neighbor bought Baxter a subscription to an aviation magazine, provoking his interest in additional military-oriented publications and missile defense systems in particular. He became self-taught in this area, and at one point he wrote a five-page paper that proposed converting the ship-based anti-aircraft Aegis system into a rudimentary missile defense system. He gave the paper to California Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, and his career as a defense consultant began. Please welcome musician, songwriter, producer, and military advisor, Jeff Skunk Baxter, to Interviewing the Legends. Hello, Jeff.
Hello there.
Man, you got so much going on in your history, it's hard to get it all in.
Well, you're very kind. And, you know, the thing with Jimmy was with Jimmy James, I mean, it was wonderful. It was literally for a couple of days. People make a big deal out of it. I did actually sell him his Stratocaster, though. Actually, I traded it to a really crappy guitar and got Doc 2 weeks' pay for it. But, yeah, that's how we met. And it was literally a couple of days. I mean, it's very kind of everybody to say that. And, yeah, he was a wonderful player. And, of course, Randy California, very special human being. But other than that, yep, it's interesting to hear all of this stuff. And I can't complain. Life's been pretty good, you know. I get to play with big toys, and I get to play with little toys.
And missiles.
And big toys.
Yeah, big toys, yeah. I grew up in D.C., and I worked downtown for years, man, for like 35 years. My dad had electronic stores in D.C. The last store I had was at the J.W. Marriott Hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue. So I met a lot of interesting people, politicians, and, you know, I know the D.C. scene very good. I lived in Alexandria. Where did you live in D.C. when you were little, I guess?
When I grew up, I lived in, it was actually called Wood Acres.
Wood Acres, yeah.
Yeah, so you probably know where that is.
Sure.
And, yeah, that's where I live. Yeah.
How long did you live there?
For about 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then moved to New York for 1 year, and then moved to Mexico City, and that's where I grew up.
Wow, Mexico City, really?
Yeah.
What took you to Mexico City?
My dad was senior executive vice president of J. Walter Thompson.
Oh, cool.
I don't know if you ever watched Mad Men, but that was my dad. Not the issues.
I watched every episode, man. That was a great show.
Well, when I went into my dad's office, it looked just like Don Draper's office.
Did he smoke his brains out like Don Draper?
No. No, that was one good thing.
Yeah, they overdid it, I think, a little bit in that show.
Well, you know, a lot of those guys came back from World War II.
Yeah.
They were all in the military, and smoking was a large part of that whole existence, I guess. So, you know, people just carried it over. Whether it's good or bad, obviously, is another question, but, yeah.
Yeah, you know, I read that they didn't actually have, those cigarettes didn't have actual tobacco on it. It had some kind of vegetable mix, so it wouldn't be that harmful to them because they were smoking so much.
I'm sure there was something very politically correct about it.
Yeah, yeah. You jammed with White House Press Secretary Tony Snow.
Yes.
I interviewed Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull a couple of times. He was good friends with Tony, as a matter of fact. And another guy, I knew Lee Atwater. He was a customer of mine.
So did I.
Did you jam with Lee?
We never got a chance to play together. But that's not true. There was one game. He was a special guy. He was a very hardcore, very tough, but that's game in Washington, D.C.
Right.
And I liked Lee. I thought he was a good man. And Tony, I mean, there's nobody better.
Yeah.
Than Tony Snow. He was an incredible human being. We were very good friends for a long time, and I still miss him. You know, he was very special.
Yeah, he was a good, he was very special. I agree with you. Lee was a good guy. I was his headphone connection because, you know, we sold electronics. And he wanted the best headphones I had, and I always special ordered them for him.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, he was a good guy. He was really cool. And, you know, he jammed with B.B. King and Paul Schaefer and, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's ironic. Him hit both of them died very young, you know.
Yes. Kind of painful, but... Anyway, every time I think about Tony, I just have really good thoughts.
Yeah.
Special guy, I used to do, every Sunday I would go on Fox news for his show.
Right. I want to talk about, of course, the largest classic rock benefit for U.S. veterans happening this 4th of July weekend, the American Vinyl Festival. Talk to me a little bit about that. Sounds like an incredible event.
Well, we put together this band called American Vinyl, just a lot of friends, guys that I've known for a while, and people that I've, whose music I like a lot. And we've been doing a lot of charity stuff, especially things having to do with veterans.
Right.
We just decided to, kind of move ahead and do this 4th of July gig and try to raise some money. We want to buy one of those $80,000 special Humvees that are specially designed for disabled veterans.
Right.
And so that's kind of the focus of this particular gig, but also to raise awareness about vets. I mean, let's face it, the whole reason why we can play rock and roll and have the ability to do that is because people who fight for our freedoms allow us to live in a country where we can do that. So
I agree.
It's pretty special.
Well, this event happens in is it Pomfret, Vermont, right? At the location is Suicide 6 Downhill Ski Area. It kicks off at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, and this happens Saturday, July 6th, and it's from 5 to 10 p.m. It's got a great selection of bands, and you, of course, and Barry Goudreau from Boston, Robert Mousy Thompson from James Brown Band, Leroy LRS Romans from the Wailers, Tim Archibald, who played with Peter Wolf.
Tim's a great bass player. It's a fun band, and it's, I can say, basically, it's like our living room, only we're inviting people.
That's cool.
Come and join us. We have a great time. Again, we figure if we're having this much fun, we might as well try to do something with it.
Yeah, exactly.
So I would urge folks to come out and help us with this, because I think it's a great cause. And it'll be a lot of fun. We'll have a good time. I think we have some different folks showing up, surprise folks who can sit in with us. We try to do that as well. Just hang out with our friends.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, I see. I think Wally Palmer from the Romantics, who's been on this show, Wally's a great guy.
Matt's one of my favorite people.
Oh, he's such a nice guy. Such a nice guy. Matt Sorum from Guns N' Roses, Velvet Revolver.
Yep.
He's going to be stopping by. The Uptown Horns, of course, from the Stones. A lot more guys. Going to be, surprise appearances for the show. And tickets are only $20 to $65, which is really cheap in today's standards. Very cheap.
Well, I think the trick is to make it affordable. I mean, I understand that people really want to, make a lot of money and stuff, but, on the other hand, you gotta make it easy for people to get involved.
Right.
And, I get, paying $300, $400, $500 for tickets and stuff, but not us.
Right.
Because we're not really doing it for the money. For us.
Yep.
So why not make it, accessible for everybody?
Exactly. Well, God bless you, man. Anything for the vets, My dad's a Marine, ex-Marine. He's 94, and I take care of him. And he still has his mind and everything. He was in Saipan and Okinawa.
Oh, my God. And by the way, your father is not an ex-Marine. He's a former Marine.
Always a Marine. Once a Marine, always a Marine, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's correct.
And my
dad has a Marine Corps account for 25 years. and there's a plaque on my wall. They made him an honorary a Master Chief.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
It says never a Marine, but always a Marine.
Yeah.
He was U.S. Army.
I agree.
He was North Africa and London.
Wow.
But, there's no ex-Marines, only former Marines.
Only former Marines.
Sorry, I just had to,
No, I agree. I agree with you 100%. My brother was in Vietnam in the Air Force. My father-in-law, who passed away, was he was in the infantry in Germany in the army.
Oh, wow!
And he was a point man.
Wow.
So yeah, I'm the only one who didn't. I was going to join the Navy and got talked out of it by Navy SEALs. Believe it or not, I don't know why.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. Isn't that? You know, I'm fascinated with what you're doing now, and I listen to all your conferences on YouTube. You know, and I'm really fascinated by your improvisation mentality, which is 100% right. You know, and that's you know, bringing in, you know, people from the outside and with untainted views. You know, with who have brilliant ideas. Yeah, I mean that's. I think that should be mandatory for government agencies and corporations.
Well, more and more and more. I mean, I do a lot of corporate speaking.
Right.
I talk a lot about Lieutenant Colonel John Boyd, mm-hmm. the concept that he came up with, the OODA loop, you know, observe, orient, decide, and act. His whole concept for breaking problems down into their the smallest pieces and how to synthesize something from that.
Right.
I'm getting a lot of traction with the government and with major corporations and the defense industry. It's slow, but we're moving forward. A lot of smart people.
There is a lot of
smart people. Very, very smart folks, you know.
Yeah, I agree. So, you know, especially, I was in corporate America. You know, I was an entrepreneur, and I owned retail electronics stores. I owned a dry cleaning plant. It was a franchise. And then I went into the corporate world as a banker, and I was in the banking industry for like 15 years and worked for five major banks. So I know that philosophy very well. But now as I'm older and I have all this experience, to get back in the game is like impossible. And one of the reasons is because HR people do not think out of the box. If you're not in that certain realm and have the buzzwords, you're out. Which I disagree 100%, you know?
Well, and, you know, again, they're good folks. And like I say, I know some, and I work with some amazing flag officers and people. They, however, because of whatever the rigors of, you know, West Point or the Naval Academy or the Air Force Academy and their training, they just have a particular point of view, not
right.
They're idiots, far from it.
Yep.
It's just that they're not used to it, and the bureaucracy and the rigidity of the structure they're in kind of forces them into it. But the good news is, like I say, they're opening up. I mean, Paul Reed Smith has come up with an incredible system that's very applicable to national security. I introduced him to the Chief of Naval the Chief of the Naval Research Lab about 6 years ago, and his company, Digital Harmonic, is moving along smartly. So more and more and more people are beginning to realize that, number one, you should listen to the outside folks, and number two, embrace it, because it's going to end up being pretty good. I mean, I'm going to be reaching out to the guitar player from Queen, Brian May,
right.
Because my old boss at Lawrence Livermore National Labs is now up at University of Rochester, and we want to work on a project together on some fusion stuff, and he's the right guy for the job, so why not? You know,
that's pretty cool. Maybe we'll have rock stars ruling the world one day.
Don't know if you want that, but at least. It would be a different point of view. It's interesting, especially in Eastern Europe now.
Uh-huh.
A lot of the leadership are former comedians.
Yep.
Certainly the leader from Poland, Mike Walesa, he was a musician. So, yeah. I mean, it could work out, I guess. I'm open. I'm standing by.
I just had Gary Pill from Boston on. So, I don't know. Have you talked to Tom Schultz? He's a pretty intelligent guy.
Yeah, I know. I haven't talked to him.
Yeah.
He certainly seems to be a very credible mind.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, Yeah, Gary's in all of the guy. He would not leave Boston for anything because of Tom. It's really amazing. Well, I don't know if I can ask you some of these questions. And as you know, I'm very intrigued with what you do. But do you think we have the technology? This is out there to stop like an asteroid from hitting the Earth.
I believe we do.
We do.
If you remember, some years ago, there was a project called Deep Impact.
Right, right.
A JPL project where we actually hit an asteroid.
Okay.
Way far away. So, yep. I think it's very doable. Question is like everything else. Does somebody want to commit to the money, time, effort to set it up and keep it in the box until you need it? No, but the technology is definitely there.
It's there. Yeah. There's so much we don't know. I mean, the normal population. And, I've noticed, the UFOs, have been so prominent lately in the news, especially from the Navy. I mean, my thought on that is I still think there's a lot of, military aircraft that is very hush-hush that the Air Force is doing, and maybe they're not telling the Navy. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, let's see. I gotta be careful here, but. The concept of a UFO, of an unidentified flying object, certainly would reflect some very advanced technologies. I mean, the Germans in World War II came up with some amazing technologies. The Glocke, the world's first ballistic missile, the world's first operational jet aircraft, the world's first guided air-to-ground missile, an air-to-air missile. I mean, those things to someone back in the 1940s would seem like science fiction. So, are they driven by, guys with tentacles coming out of their eyes? I would have to demur on that. I just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But certainly, advanced technologies. Why not? I mean, imagine your grandmother looking at the space shuttle.
Right. Yeah, exactly right.
What?
Yeah.
That's impossible.
Yeah.
Impossible.
Yeah.
Can't do that. Yeah. Going to the moon. I think
sometimes, maybe the Air Force, maybe there's a higher level, above their pay grade, of the pilots and the Navy and everything. They just can't talk about it or... But like you said, there's a lot of countries out there that have really cool technology. Now, I saw some really neat aircraft and droids. The droids are getting really big in China. I know Iran has some droids out there. Do you think we should have done anything about Iran? But do you think we should have let it go since it was a droid, even though the droid was a lot of money?
I really can't comment on that kind of stuff because it does get political.
Yep.
The problem with discussing national security in a lot of areas is that most people try to politicize it.
Right.
And there are two very separate things. They are tangential, but people try to politicize it. So I just try to stay away from opinions that deal with with politics. So I apologize, but.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
On that one.
Yeah, I had a spat with Queensryche. I forgot his name now. I'm showing you my age. Is the ex frontman? We were talking about because he was going on politically, and I was saying, I don't really think it's necessary for artists to come out with their political views. I think they should just do what they do and, leave it up to the rest of the world, And we disagreed on that. So, I understand what you're talking about.
Well, I have no problem. I think because the First Amendment
Jeff Tate
is the bedrock of the Constitution, and everybody has the right to free speech. I have no problem with it. I guess the thing that I would have a problem with is using a performance to further a particular political point of view.
Right.
I think people come to hear music.
Yep.
In the same way, I have a problem with awards shows and stuff where people seem to try to turn it into a political forum. I have a problem with that, I guess. But as far as people having the right to speak out, there should be a time and a place for everything.
Exactly. And like you said, you know, back in the 60s, it was through your music, you know, and it worked very well, you know. So, but, you know, to come out and start bashing the president of the United States, you know, like a Robert De Niro, I am totally against that, man. You know, I think that's just, you know, showing you how.
Well, again, I have no problem with the First Amendment.
Right.
What I do have a bit of a problem with is I think this generation and maybe the generation before
is
suffering from what George Santayana warned everyone about. Those who don't learn the lessons of history are doomed to repeat it.
Yeah.
That their understanding and their grasp of history and their grasp of the world situation again becomes so politicized that they don't realize that when they say things like that, it's not just their fan base that's listening. It's the leadership of every country in the world.
Right, right.
And perhaps a little more thought should be given to that. Because I was on an airplane flying about 3 days ago, sat next to a very nice lady, had a conversation. She was from Poland. Her father died in Auschwitz, and she was talking about America and how if America goes away, there is nobody else
mm-hmm.
to carry the standard of freedom.
Right.
What other country can you think of that has the capability, the strength, the desire, the will, the history to do that? And I thought about that for a second, and she's right.
Yeah.
So perhaps when folks feel the need to disparage people and disparage the country, I mean, maybe it's not a good idea to do that while the president, whomever he may be, is trying to negotiate a nuclear stand down with
right.
another country.
Yeah.
I think it's just a question of people being a little bit more aware of that. All.
I agree with you 100%. One of your heroes, I think, was Churchill, right?
When I was 5 years old, she did two things for me. She let me take piano lessons, and she taught me to read.
Uh huh.
And while I was reading Huckleberry Finn with my mom, my dad came in and said, "Oh, so you can read now." And of course, I'm a little snot. I go, "Yeah, I can read." So he goes into the library, picks up a copy of The Gathering Storm by Winston Churchill, and
right.
drops it in my lap and says, "Read that." So it took me a couple of years to get through it. But yes, Winston Churchill was an incredible man.
Yep.
Not flawless by any means. But he saved the Western world.
He did.
And you gotta admit, a guy who will sit naked in a bathtub with a pile of bread, smoking a cigar, talking to the President of the United States, is a rock star.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you saw that movie too.
well, I did. After that, I became very interested in Churchill, and
yeah.
I started to read about him when I was a very young age.
That was a great
and
movie.
My dad helped me with that, because he also
yep.
felt that Churchill was the right man at the right time. There's no doubt about it.
My hero, and I'm not afraid to say, was Ronald Reagan. I'm one of those guys.
Well, you know, again, the politics aside,
right.
Republican, Democrat, Independent, whatever it may be, the idea, the concept that he came up with,
mm-hmm.
which was derisively called Star Wars.
Yeah, exactly.
That was, you know, people
yep.
make up names to try to humiliate people, but the idea was to create a missile defense capability. Whether or not it was going to work. The Russians believed it.
Yeah, exactly.
And it basically brought down the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
So you got to hand it to them, at least on that level. That sure. was a very interesting, very interesting concept. And for whatever reason, it was successful.
Yep. You know, also I liked about him, he had a sense of humor, and the press loved him, you know, and that's the problem, I think, with, now I like Trump, I did vote for him, but, that's his problem, I think, is the sense of humor is not there like a Ronald Reagan, you know, and if you've embraced, even though the press is doing all this crap, if you had embraced him from the beginning, maybe things would have been maybe a little different. I don't know, a lot different, but maybe a little different, you know?
Well, we've been lucky to have some good presidents on both sides. I mean, I don't think that Jimmy Carter was an excellent expert in foreign affairs.
Right.
But his understanding of the domestic situation in the United States was quite credible. And I think he did a lot. For the people of the United States, there were things about Bill Clinton that I wasn't a big fan of. But on the other hand, Bill Clinton managed to create a working relationship with Newt Gingrich, and they actually got stuff done.
Right.
So, you know, I think we've been pretty lucky all the way across.
Right. Yeah, it could have been a lot worse.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
I just want to talk a little bit more about music. You know, I really admire session players, man. And you've been incredible. You're everywhere. And you are an amazing, amazing musician. And you've played with everybody. You know, you're a household name. If you shaved your mustache, I'm not sure if I would recognize you.
Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe I should do that sometime.
I don't know. That would freak a lot of people out. But I had Dennis Coffey on recently from the Funk Brothers. You know, I admire guys like that. You know, and of course the Wrecking Crew. I was good friends with Joe Lala, who I think you knew, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Joe was a great guy. Went to his house a few times in Tampa. You know, local here in Tampa. Miss him a lot, but he played with a lot of people. Carmine, that piece, and of course, did a lot of studio work. And Dave Mason, I've had those guys on. And, of course, Dr. John. You know, Dr. John was the only interview I had a hard time understanding.
Well, Mac was a very good friend. We've been friends for many, many years.
Right.
That was a hard one for me, I got to tell you. I really miss him. I will miss him. A very special man. A heart bigger than the state of California.
Yep.
And a unique, unique talent. And a very special, again, very special guy. I don't know what else to say. Godspeed, you know.
Yeah. Another friend of yours who I interviewed and loved to death, too, was Keith Emerson. Yeah.
And I miss him. I miss him very much.
Another good guy. Another great guy. I got to ask you about a band that you guys put together called The Best, which was a super group. And what happened there? Why did that never take off?
Why didn't it?
Why
did it?
Well, it didn't last that long, right?
No, it wasn't meant to.
Oh, okay.
We thought it would be fun.
Right.
Put together a crew.
Right.
Of guys, because we basically, were, the house band for the China Club.
Okay.
In LA. And by doing these, somebody came in and said, wait a minute, you guys might want to go out and do something. We said, okay. So we went out to Japan. It was just for Japan. We did one show in Hawaii, but we was basically play four shows in Japan and just have fun. That was we had a great time. We had a really good time. again, brilliant musicianship. That's,
yep.
You know, when you play with guys, I remember we were doing Forrest the Spider, which was the John Entwistle song.
Exactly, yeah.
And so, just for the hell of it during rehearsal, I started to play the theme from Jaws in the middle of the song. So Keith Emerson jumped on it right away.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, with the right French horn patch and everything, and so away we go. And then, so I'm thinking, all right, so I'm going to do the first 8 bars of Wisorski's Night on Bald Mountain. And Keith, again, jumped all over it. And, of course, John Entwistle studied French horn, so he had a deep understanding of the classics. And so we went into Night on Bald Mountain, and then we went into Mussorgsky's Rite of Spring, and then we went back into Boris the Spider. And we did it live, and people were just like, what? What's going on here? That the level of musicianship was so high that there was really nothing that we couldn't attempt. We had a ball. And, you know, it was just a one-shot deal.
Yeah. Yeah, for people that didn't know the band, you had Keith Emerson, John Entwistle, Joe Walsh, Jeff Skunk Baxter, Simon Phillips. Oh, man. And
yeah, it was on fire, that band.
Holy cow. You can't miss.
It was pretty good.
You can't miss with a band like that, you know?
And we weren't trying to be facetious, but, you know. Anyway, Ray, I've got to jump. I've got another telecon, actually, coming up in a couple of seconds with Uncle Sam. So
oh, with Uncle Sam.
Jump, but I do appreciate you taking the time. And again, hopefully folks will feel it in their hearts to come and,
yep.
And help out the people that help keep this country safe.
Jeff, all I want to say, man, is thank you for being on the show, for all the incredible music you've given us and continue to bring. And thank you most of all for your service to our country, man. We really, really appreciate that.
Well, you're very kind. And I'll leave you with one thought.
Okay.
I'm very lucky to serve my country in the way I do, but I was talking to a number of people. I was talking to Danny Korchmar the other day.
Right.
And because people say, hey, what can we do? What can I do? And I say, hey, every note that you play makes you a freedom fighter. The people who don't are afraid of freedom, mm-hmm. are afraid of you because they don't mind taking a bullet in the heart because they think, you know, there's some sort of reward someplace. But they're frightened of you because you have the secret to open their hearts.
Right.
I mean, that when the Taliban was cutting the hands off musicians,
yeah.
in Afghanistan,
yep.
That kind of spun me up a little bit. So every person out there who plays, every person out there who writes, every person out there who does anything that takes freedom, improvisation, and something from the heart, is a freedom fighter.
Yep.
Everyone.
I agree.
Everyone. So there, I thank everyone for their service.
Amen, brother. Thank you so much, man. Happy 4th.
You too, sir.
All right, Jeff. Take care, man.
You all too.
Right. All right. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Well, the largest classic rock benefits for the U.S. veterans happening this 4th of July weekend. It's the American Vinyl Festival. Man, this is going to be awesome. The event will feature the American Vinyl All-Star Band comprising of Jeff Skunk Baxter from the Doobie Brothers and Steely Dan, Barry Gaudreau from Boston, Robert Mousie Thompson from the James Brown Band, Leroy LRS Romans from the Wailers, Tim Archibald from Peter Wolf. It's going to be great. It's going to be, that's a hell of a band. An onslaught of special guests. They're going to have Matt Sorum from Guns N' Roses, Wally Palmer from the Romantics, the Uptown Horns from the Stones. The list goes on and on. A lot of special guests. The American Vinyl Festival will support Freedom Drives U.S. Inc., a non-for-profit charity engaged in the facilitation of mobility converted vehicles, other than minivans, for veterans with mobility needs. Now, this event takes place Saturday, July 6th, from 5 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Location is Suicide 6 Downhill Ski Area. 247 Stage Road in Pomfret, Vermont. The event kicks off at 5. It includes food vendors, merchants, and silent auctions. Tickets are only $20 to $65. I mean, that's a steal. Veterans, of course, get in free with a ticketed guest. Tickets, for more information, you can go to the AVASB website. That's www.AmericanVinylAllStarBand.net. And get your tickets now because the event's coming up soon. It's going to be fantastic. Very special thanks today to Denise of DMK Publicity and Bill Johnson for arranging this interview with Jeff Skunk Baxter. And, of course, the dynamic duo of Doug and Don Newsome of BBS Radio for making the magic happen for each and every broadcast of Interviewing the Legends. If you have comments, suggestions for the show, contact me at Interviewing the Legends or interviewingthelegends@gmail.com. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel, Interviewing the Legends with Ray Shasho, for the very latest interviews. And it's real news. How about that? Don't forget to purchase a copy of my book entitled Check the G's, the true story of an eclectic American family and their wacky family business. All takes place in downtown Washington, D.C. Great story. Available now at Amazon.com. I promise you will live it. Have a great week, everybody. Happy 4th. And God bless the veterans.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to Interviewing the Legends. Brought to you by the Publicity Works Agency. Call 941-877-1552 or visit us at publicityworksagency.com. Specializing in author and music artist publicity plans. We shine when we make you shine. Tune in to Interviewing the Legends every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time on BBS Radio, Station 1.